My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink, nor have I had a drink, since January 25th, 1981, and I'm grateful to God for that. And I'm privileged and grateful to be here with you guys. I always enjoy coming up here to this group and to all the other groups I'm privileged to talk to and share a little bit about my experience in this deal. And that's really the only thing I can share about my experience. And if, you know, if I say something to disturb you, you need to look into that. You know, check it out, figure that thing out. You know, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. You know, as alcoholics, we think if we get disturbed, there's something wrong with them, right? That's the old ideas. But what turns out apparently is whenever I'm disturbed, no matter what the cause, that's a spiritual axiom. There's something wrong with me. And when I start taking that to heart and I start realizing that, and instead of harboring a resentment, try to figure out why does that guy bother me? Why does that bother me so much? And start working on that over a period of years. What happens to you is you get to the bottom of why things upset you. When you get to the bottom of why things upset you and you pray about it and you allow the Spirit of God to heal that thing in me which disturbs me because of you or some sort of situation, you learn the secret. The Apostle Paul, he says, I've learned the secret. I've learned to be content in all things. And you learn not to really base your feelings or have feelings based upon your circumstances. You know, sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down, sometimes you have money, sometimes you don't have money. Sometimes you're in love, sometimes you're not in love. Sometimes they treat you right, sometimes they treat you unfairly. And a guy like me, I'm an if butter and a yes onlyer, and an if onlyer, you know. Yes, but you don't understand. If only, you know. My feelings are always tied into my bank account, how I look, my weight, what's going on, and all that sort of stuff. And the vagaries of this world. If you understand what's going on in this world, there's a lot of moving parts out there. Have you all noticed that? A lot of stuff you don't have control over, even though you try. And when you're an alcoholic and you're scared, and you're scared of everything. That's not me talking, that's the big book. It says the corrosive thread of fear runs through all of us. When you're scared, you're anxious a lot, and you worry about things, and you're constantly trying to control stuff. When you're scared, you got to control. Yeah, I got to control people with your mind. You got to think about things a lot. You got a lot of thoughts going on and things like that. It's a difficult way to live. You know, they say in the big book, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. You know, that's what they say. Apparently, that's why I drank, because I like the effect. That's why I drank. I drank for the effect. They're restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. And our alcoholic life seems the only normal life. It seems normal to me to feel and act and perceive the way I feel, act, and perceive. As a matter of fact, the way they tell me to do it in here, in the meetings or in the big book, seems abnormal, seems uncomfortable to me. It's comfortable to me to act against my better interest. Carl Menninger wrote a book called Man Against Himself, which was published before the big book. And in his chapter on alcoholism, on alcoholics, he said alcoholics are men and women who are out to destroy themselves. And if you look at your own life, if I look at my life, if you look at what's going on there with some of the movie stars and everything, it doesn't really matter how much money you have, how much fame you have, how smart you are, what your talents are. If you're an alcoholic, somehow, some way, you'll take the whole package and somehow figure out how to destroy yourself, you know, physically, mentally, or spiritually. And somehow, some way, we have to change. And the only thing that's ever changed me is God and the power of God. And I think that's what that's what the big book is all about. So that's what I talk about. And as I said, this is based upon my experience. It's not really based upon my intelligence. My intelligence would have gotten me out of here a long time ago. I mean, I took my sponsor, my first sponsor, Bob Sullivan, to my office once. I was terribly under-sponsored. You know, I came to AA, I had two neurons working, they were waving goodbye to each other, and I wasn't doing too well. I was a trial attorney, and if I would be having a conversation with you, and midway into the conversation, I'd forget what I was talking about. That's happened to me now, but it's old age. It's not. But back then, I was like, you know, my brain wasn't working too well, and so I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was skittish, and I was scared, and I was all those things. I didn't know what to do, and I had this guy who was taking me around. His name was Bob Sullivan, and he had been picking me up at my house, He actually 12-stepped me while I was in the hospital. And afterwards, he used to pick me up every night at 6 o'clock. And he'd say, okay, where do you want to go to dinner? We'd go eat dinner, and then we'd take him to an AA meeting. And then after the AA meeting, he would take me to Pumpernickel or something like that, and we'd sit and we'd talk for 3 hours. And he was always surrounded by some other guys, and that's the way I did AA. That's what I always thought AA was. I never thought AA was you go to a meeting and then you leave the meeting and go home. To me, if you went out for AA, you were out for the night. You were out from like 6 till 2 in the morning, you know, with your sponsor. And the meeting was just something you did so you had something to talk about for 3 hours at Pumpernickel or something like that. And so that's the way I did AA, and that's the guys I followed. And I was terribly undersponsored. I loved this guy, and I trusted this guy, and I looked up to this guy. But I was I should have been obviously sponsored by I graduated with Department of Honors in Mathematics, and I was going for my doctorate in algebraic topology, and I graduated law school, and they stuck me with a guy who didn't even graduate like elementary school or something, and he was a used car salesman. But I was too sick and dumb to understand the difference, you know, and I was vulnerable, and so they stick you with these guys. And he had about 15 years sobriety from Chicago. And I took him to my office once, and he used to call me counselor. He didn't say it in a nice way. He'd say, how you doing, counselor? And it was sort of like a little derision in his voice, you know. As a matter of fact, all the men I looked up to in Alcoholics Anonymous, all my sponsors, the men I looked up to, just although I know they loved me and they tried to help me, they always sort of treated me with a little bit of disdain, a little bit of, I don't know whether you'd call it disrespect or sort of like some sort of way, and maybe it was just my perception of them saying, listen, buddy, you're not as smart as you think you are. And which is true, I was never as smart as I thought I was. And I took him into my office once, and I showed him all my degrees. I have this wall with plaques and degrees, and you know I've been educated far beyond my capacity to understand anything. And I showed him all my degrees, and I said, Bob, these are my you know degrees. And he looks at me and he says, you know, Russ, rectal thermometers have degrees. You know what they do with those. So that sort of like gives you an idea of how I was treated by old timers in Alcoholics Anonymous, which was good. It's a good thing that nobody was impressed with me. As impressed as I was with myself. I supposedly we're on the second step, but don't let that fool you. Who knows where this is going? I have an unction, a feeling that I want to talk about something which I believe has to do with that step and some other steps. And you know, it's difficult. It's interesting. I was thinking about this. Obviously, or maybe not so obviously for you, step two as the whole. As far as I'm concerned, the whole program, but definitely step two, is the beginnings of something that we would call faith. And it's interesting, you know, to talk about faith. It's almost harder, in a sense, to talk about faith and the development of faith when you're in after 33 years you live a life where it's devoted to faith. Where your whole life is about faith. You know, I've been doing this thing for 33 years. I'm no longer like a skeptic. You know, I'm not a cynic. I'm not trying to figure this thing out. You know, you understand what I'm saying? I'm like into it. It's the central part of my life. You know, my whole life is about thinking about God and thinking about faith and hanging around with other people. I'm into that deal. You know what they were talking about in the big book where, you know, all the stuff where they talk about they encourage church membership, and at least some point I belong to a church. I became a deacon in the church, which is pretty good for a Jewish kid, you know what I mean? You know, I mean I go to Bible studies, go to 2 or 3 Bible studies, you know. My sponsor is a Baptist preacher with 57 years. I mean I'm like into it. You understand what I'm saying? I'm into the deal. You know, I don't laugh about it, I don't joke about it, you know, I'm serious about it. You know, and the bottom line is, you know, you know this part in the big book where it says, let's see whether we can find it. You know this part where it says, and I believe it's in chapter 5, if I can find chapter 5 here. You know this part where it says in chapter 5, you know where it says this? Perhaps there is a better way. By the way, this is the big book. Anybody ever seen this? This is our basic text. don't want anybody, you know, I don't want anybody writing New York and saying there's some guy going off the basic text. I'm into the basic text. I'm not into, you know, we have this wonderful fellowship. I call it Well People's Anonymous. You know, I'm not into the wisdom of the rooms. I'm not into the wisdom of the rooms. I mean, I love the fellowship. I love the people in the fellowship. I love hanging around with a few people in the fellowship. But I understand what this fellowship is made up of. Sick and suffering alcoholics in various degrees of recovery, all of whom would try to figure out how to work this thing with their own program, not necessarily the way they say to work it, but something that's comfortable to them. So I understand we have groups of people that are trying to figure out how they can do this thing so that it's comfortable, how they can get out of it, you know what I mean? An easier, softer way. I mean, it's not because we're bad people. It's because it's our nature. It's our nature to be defiant. I mean, our chief characteristic is defiant. That's what it says in 12 and 12. Our chief characteristic is go to hell. You do it your way. Don't take my inventory. I'm going to do it my way. I work my program. You work your program. There's only one program. There's not 3,000 programs. There's not 10. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. The word is thoroughly. Thoroughly followed our path. If you're painstaking about doing this, painstaking. In other words, it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. You do exactly what we did, you'll get what we got. It doesn't say do whatever the hell you want to do and you'll get what we got. It says do what we say to do, you get what you want. You know, this is like a giant game of telephone. You know the game of telephone? Where one guy tells the other guy, and the next guy, and the next guy, and the next time. By the time he gets to the 100th guy, you know, God becomes a clown, you know. I mean, whatever. It becomes whatever it's going to be. If we didn't have this big book, if we didn't have, like, a source that we go back to and actually read, and believe me, alcoholics, if you're an alcoholic like me, you can twist anything to mean anything and ignore anything. I had a wife who said to me, a beautiful wife with a beautiful child, and a lot of you guys have heard this, who said to me one Friday morning, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. That's about as serious as I'm saying it right now. And she was serious. She was like delivering the mail. She wasn't starving. She says, I just want you to know, you come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you. I was as sober when she said that to me as I am right now. And believe me, I was a division chief in the state attorney's office. I was trying murder cases. I was in charge of 3 or 4 or 5 attorneys. You know, and I was sober, and I was functioning, and I was intelligent, and I was on my way to work. And she looked me in the eye, and the most important woman in my life, with my child and my house, said, "You come home drunk one more time, I'm leaving you." I got in my car, I drove 3 blocks down the street, I stopped at a red light, and I said to myself, "Seriously, what the hell did she mean by that?" So don't tell me alcoholics aren't idiot savants. Aren't individuals that can be brilliant singers, brilliant actors, brilliant in many, many fields, and not even understand when the judge says, "I see you one more time, you're going to jail." What is that all about? We understand what we want to understand. We see what we want to see. There's a reason why the carpenter said, "Those who have ears to hear, let them hear. Those who have eyes, eyes to see, let them see." You would be shocked at how many people go to the treatment 15,000 times. Maybe this next treatment program will help me. Go to AA meeting 15,000 times and don't get it. Because they don't want to get it. They don't see it. They don't want it. You know, most people don't stay sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's true. But it works better than any other program in the world. It's because they don't get it. They want to take this program. They want to read a few chapters or something like that and go to the meetings and then do it the way they want to do it. And that's okay. You know what I mean? I never know, you know, who's going to get it and who's not going to get it. But let me read this. So I like to stick with the black and white of the book. And the longer I'm sober and the more I say, and I've been sober around 33 years, you know, it's experience. When a man with experience meets a man with money, a man with experience walks away with the money. A man with the money walks away with an experience. You know, this isn't like something I'm like dreaming up or some sort of theory with me. This is going through the cancer, going through the bullshit, going through the money problems, going through, I got a wife, I got 4 kids, I got 6 grandkids, I'm self-supporting through my own contributions, I'm living out there in the world. This is a guy working this deal through the hard spots, through the valleys, through the deal, the 3 o'clock in the morning, what am I going to do, what's going to happen with this, all the crises that you're going through, that I went through, somehow trying not to drink and not to blow my brains out or not to do this and getting through that deal. And moving and growing in that experience and finally getting to where I am right now, and I haven't stopped. So this is based upon this has been tested on the I road tested this sobriety. This sobriety has been road tested. This isn't one of these deals, a guy out of treatment where you got 2 or 3 years saying, this is what I think. What do you mean, this is what I think? What do you know? What do you know? A couple of years? 2 or 3? What do you know about raising 4 children and 6 grandchildren and running a business for 33 years and going through the... What do you know? What do you know? You have to hang around people. You know, that's what it says. If you want what we have and you're willing to go to Aim Late together, first thing I had to do is I had to get a we. I had to get people to look up to you. How do you get people to look up to you when all you do is look to yourself and you think you're smarter than everybody else? Because you're arrogant. How do you do that? How do you break that alcoholic arrogance? Well, that's why, you know, unless and until an alcoholic accepts his alcoholism and all its consequences, his sobriety will be precarious, which is not a good thing, by the way. Of real happiness, you'll find none at all. You'll never find happiness unless you accept the consequences of your alcoholism. What are the consequences of your alcoholism? The consequences of your alcoholism. Alcoholism is not about drinking. Alcoholism is not about drinking. Drinking is a symptom of alcoholism. If you see somebody constantly drinking, it's because he's an alcoholic, because that's symptomatic of alcoholism, because he's drinking himself to death, because he'd rather die and be drunk than be sober, because sobriety is incredibly painful to alcoholics. You know, and you should know alcoholism has nothing to do with drinking, because you've stopped drinking and you're still nuts. And that's why you go to meetings, because you've not drinking for a year or 2 years or 3 years, and every once in a while you say, I'm a piece of shit, I wish I was dead. And you hate yourself, and you're blowing your brain, and you still don't understand why you have the 15,000 points all bad shit about yourself and other people. Alcoholism isn't about drinking, it's about thinking. If you're not going to drink, you're going to overeat, you're going to do with the pornography, you're going to do whatever it is to get out of sobriety, because sobriety to you is scary. And that's, I'm talking about, I can't help somebody who's a drinker. I really can't help somebody who's a drinker. They got to drink. Everybody's got to have their last drink. I don't rob alcoholics of their desperation. I don't sit there and say, please don't drink. I say, go drink, for God's sakes. Because you're making us go drink. You'll either die, which is okay. Alcoholics are about as common as dirt. Or you'll kill a family of 4 or something on the street. Go drink and get it over with. And then come in here and let's learn how to live. Let's grow up instead of becoming a thumb-sucking crybaby. Bill Wilson said the next frontier is emotional sobriety. Most recently, he says the real problem with alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. Dependencies on other people, dependencies on all sorts of stuff. Things we think we need in order to be okay, because we're certainly pieces of crap by ourselves. One of the things I heard said a long time ago, and it so matched me, it says, I'm a person, the guy said, he says, I was a nothing, I was always going to be a nothing, I used to put something in my body, it turned me into an almost, when you're a nothing, almost, it's top of the world. And so what I did was I came in there, I read the big book, just like everybody else read the big book. You know, I read the entire big book, which means I saw, you know what it means? After I was done, I saw acceptance is the answer to all my problems, which it is not. Acceptance is not the answer to all the problems. If it was, we'd have a matchbook cover. You know, it's the answer to some problems. It's a good thing to have, but sometimes courage is the answer to all the problems. Sometimes a lot, some faith is always the answer to the problems. But I didn't read. I just saw the things I wanted to see and the stuff I didn't understand or I didn't want to see. You know what? I threw them out, which is okay. But as I stayed sober longer and longer in Alcoholics Anonymous, and dealt with the crap, and dealt with the foreclosures, and the low money, and the relationship problems, and the sponsee problems, and the sponsor problems, and the AA problems. As I dealt with all the problems that keeps you up at 3 o'clock in the morning, I had to look for answers, more and more answers as to why I shouldn't drink, why I'm uncomfortable, how am I going to get to sleep, and the answers came at 3 o'clock in the morning when I was reading this book. And all of a sudden, at 3 o'clock in the morning, at 10 years sober, I would see a line in the big book that I had probably read 50 times that I never saw before. And I would see that line and I said, that's the answer. And it meant absolutely nothing to me. That line meant nothing to me until I had that problem on that night, which was keeping me up for weeks. And I read that line and all of a sudden I said, holy crap, that's the answer. And all of a sudden I saw it. And you go through that about 10,000 times. By the time you get through it and manage to stay sober, you actually have not only read the book, you actually know what's in it. Because it becomes a working part of your mind. It becomes a working part of your life. And so this is what the book says. You know, because this is supposed to be our basic text. What we all agree. I mean, I don't care whether you agree or not. I mean, how you feel. You know, well, I know what the book says. It says, perhaps there is a better way.
We think so. For we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. I don't sit around and saying, I wonder what they mean by that. What do they mean by God? Do they mean that box over there? I know what they're talking about. They're talking about the deity. That's why it's a capital. I know what these guys were doing. I read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. I know about them getting on their knees and giving their lives to God. I know what books they were reading before Alcoholics Anonymous. I know that AA started in 1935. The big book was written in 1939. They said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. I know what their path was. All they did was read the Bible. I read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Times, where it says the three books that we found as old timers were absolutely necessary for any type of meaningful sobriety was the book of James, 1 Corinthians 13, and Sermon on the Mount. I know what they were reading. I know what they were talking about. I know exactly what they did because I wanted to thoroughly follow their path because I wanted more. I wanted more. I didn't want to be one of these thumb-sucking crybabies that hang around for 15 years, go through 15,000 divorces, are still chasing skirts in here like I'm 18 years old when I'm 50. I wanted more. I wanted to be like my sponsors, the guys I hung around with. And I heard a long time ago, the man and woman you'll be in the next 5 years will depend on the people you hang out with and the books you read. And trust me, the books you read will depend on who you hang out with. You know, I was done hanging out with the guys in the bars and listening to their bullshit. And they're all in here. Every banana, every crazy person, every bullshit artist, every dilettante, every guy who's looking to bust out of here to get laid, and that's the only reason he's here, they're right in here right now. All the guys in the bars who are never going to make it, they're here right now. They're looking for you so you can go out and have a smoke with you outside and talk about pussy. They're all here right now. They want to have nothing to do with this thing. They're out there. They'll be out there bad-mouthing me. They'll be out there bad-mouthing you. They'll be out there bad-mouthing this program and say it's a bunch of bullshit. And you get to choose who you want to hang out with. And based on who you choose, who you're going to hang out with, will depend exactly what kind of man or woman you'll be 5 or 10 years from now. So don't blame anybody in here, or don't blame me for where you're going to be, because it's your choice. Because you're free. You're free. You have recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. You don't have to drink anymore. All you need to do is use your free will right now to make a choice as to who you're going to listen to and who you hang out with. That's on you. That's your deal. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we're now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We're in the world to play the role He assigns. Just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us and humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. To the extent that we believe in and rely on, and He's the central factor of our life, is how we match calamity with serenity. I've learned to be content in all things. In this world, you will have problems, and be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. To overcome the world, what does that mean? To not be so... You want to know what it means to overcome? You want to know what it means to not overcome the world? Hang around discussion meetings where you can bitch and moan about all your problems. Hang around people all the time that are just going to discussion meetings and talking about their problems, and then you'll understand the difference between sobriety, emotional sobriety, and what it means to just make believe you're going to AA and whining and crying and not getting any better. You know, alcoholics are like men and women. You know, I'm the guy on the Titanic. You know, and the ship is going down. And everybody, every sane person is running towards the lifeboats. And I'm sitting there in the middle of the Titanic and the discussion meeting saying, I ain't leaving the ship until I find out exactly why it's going down. And by the time the water reaches my lower lip, I may say, I've got the answer. But you ultimately realize that it doesn't matter who, but you have the answer if you can't get off your personal sinking ship. And the bottom line is, I want to get off the ship. I'm not interested in talking about the problem anymore or whining or crying. I want to get off the ship. And you know what it says about getting off the ship in here later on? It says if we do these things, if we sincerely turn our will and our lives over to God, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all powerful, He gives us everything we need if we stay close to Him and perform His work well. We lose all thoughts of our little plans and designs. We start thinking about how we can help others. It says we lose fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter. We are reborn if you turn your life over to Him utterly. That's what it says in the book. That's not Russell Spatz. That's the big... Did you know that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, listen, trust me, don't argue with me at this point. My mind is closed on this. You know, you got to stand for something, like the old country music song says, or you'll fall for anything. You know, believe me, I've been there, I've done that, I got the t-shirt, I know the deal, okay? On this subject, it's closed. God is the central fact of my life. He is the answer. It doesn't matter. You know, God bless you. I hope some of you are going to make it, some of you are not. The ones who are going to make it stay sober for 32, 3 years and not be thumb-sucking crybabies. One day, they're going to be before a group and they're going to be saying the same crap I'm saying. Because that was the answer for the old times, that's the answer for me, and that's the deal in this program. And the ones that don't are either going to be drinking, they're going to be miserable, or trying to figure out what's going on. We are in the world to play the role He assigns just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us, and humbly rely on Him does He enable us to match calamity with serenity. We never apologize to anyone for depending upon our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality is a way of weakness, paradoxically as a way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. All men of faith have courage. They don't sit around and say, well, you want to do the meeting, you want to do this, and they say, I'm not ready. All men of faith have courage. Bill Wilson said, the Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. All men of faith have courage. These men had courage. They talked their talk, they walked their talk, they did their deal. They weren't ashamed. They weren't ashamed, like many people are in Alcoholics Anonymous, to talk about God because they're worried about some nudnik who's sitting next to them and isn't even paying their Visa bill, what they might think about them. I mean, I'll tell you, if this program is a program about staying sober for 10 or 15 years and then sitting around and worry about what other people in Alcoholics think about, I'd want to blow my brains out. I'm 65 years old. I've raised kids. I've raised grandkids. I have a business of my own. I've got to sit around and worry about whether or not you like me. To me, that's not sobriety. That's fear. That's something that you do in the third grade. You know, I've done that. I've done that worrying about what other people think about me all my life. I don't want to deal with that stuff. That's bondage. That's as much alcoholism. That's as much a consequence of alcoholism as anything else. We never apologize for God. All men of faith and courage, they trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once, we commence to outgrow fear. That's what I want. I want to outgrow fear like that. You know, what would it be like to have a fearless life? There is a solution. We have found much of heaven. We have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. That's what I want. You don't want that crap? You don't want that deal? You just want to stop drinking? Well, congratulations. I can tell you this. Unless you get rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, unless you start experiencing much of heaven, you could just be doing jail time in Alcoholics Anonymous. You're going to be doing white knuckle stuff. You're going to be here for 10 or 20 years. Maybe you'll manage not to drink. You ain't going to be a happy camper. You're going to be faking it. I want this stuff. I don't want just not drink. I want to be excited and enthused. I was telling somebody, a guy came up to me. He says, we were talking about being, you know, I drove up with, I don't know, where is he? Joseph, where are you? Joseph, where are you? Stand up, Joseph. Joseph just got a haircut. So, Joe, how old are you?
I'm 18.
18. Okay, you can sit down. So I showed him a picture of me when I was 18. I actually looked like that. So be careful, you know? Look at what happened to me, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? I looked like that when I was 18. And I said to him, and so we were talking about what happens when you're 18 years old and 20 years old and 25 years old and 30 years old and chasing the skirts and the only thing on your mind is, you know, Playboy bunnies and all that sort of stuff. And I said, listen, I've been there, I've done that. And I said to him, I said, Joseph, I just want to tell you something. I am more excited about my life at 65 years of age than I've ever been in my entire life. This is the greatest part of my life. And I said, I want to tell you something. The key is you want to end well. I don't want to end as a guy who's 80 years old or 70 years old thinking, gee, I used to be okay or it used to be great or worrying about or thinking about what I used to. I don't want to be playing the game of a guy who's trying to act like he's 16 or 18 or 25 when I'm 65. I couldn't be more excited about my life. And it all has to do with, it doesn't have to do with broads, excuse me, gals, it doesn't have to do with gals, it doesn't have to do with money, it doesn't have to do with cars, it doesn't have to do with any of that stuff, it has to do with relationships. My relationship with God and my relationship with other people. And my relationship with other people depends upon my relationship with God. So it's so hard to talk about the second step, which I know is something that you talk about when somebody is first coming in and they don't know about this stuff, when your whole life is like imbued with this thing. Now, I got to try to think back the way it was before I even thought about God, and it was shitty. That's the only thing I can say, and all I can hope is if I put who I am in front of you right now, somebody in here might say, I want that crap. I don't know anything about God. See, to me, it's not about God. It's about who do you choose to be if you want what we have. This is never about understanding God, because let me tell you something. You'll never understand God. I don't understand God. He's God. He's like bigger than us. He's smarter. It's a huger thing. It's outside the universe. I don't understand him. The only question is what kind of man or woman you want to be in 5 or 10 years. What do you want? That's why the book says if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. You're not even ready to take these steps unless you found somebody you want what they have. Or is it you just want what you used to have? So the only thing is you put something in front of somebody and they say, I don't know what the hell that guy is smoking, but I want that deal. That's what this book is all about. That's what testimony is all about. Man, I'll tell you something. If you're an alcoholic and you suffer from the brain crap I suffered from and the feelings I suffered from and the ill at ease and the second guessing and all the crap and the worry and the anxiety I suffered from, and you don't want to get rid of that, then you suffer from a different type of alcoholism than I suffered from. I can tell you that. The great fact is just this and nothing less than this, that we have had a deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards ourselves, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today, the number one thing in the central fact, the thing we think about all the time, the thing that we're centered on all the time, the central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty. They were clear that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. I understand what they were talking about. I understand the people they were hanging around. I understand about Father Ed Dowling. I understand about the guys. I understand about Sam Shoemaker. I understand about the Oxford Group. I understand about the stuff they were reading. I understand what they were focused on. I understand what their meetings were all about during the first 4 years. I get it. I get that deal. In one of the stories I like, I just love this story. I don't know why. It's just one of those things. It's the story, he sold himself short. If I could find it right here. This is what the guy says in the last 4 paragraphs. These last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day has replaced the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are has replaced the old impatient chopping at the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills and instead have tried to accomplish little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoy the respect of many people. Where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my 8 years, I have made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I'll always cherish. Now, here we go. Here's the deal. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. Does he say he's a billionaire? Does he say he has a lot of money? I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods is not great. Does he say he's got Ferraris or cars or Lamborghinis or a lot of stuff? But I have a fortune. Here's the fortune he has. You know, you see all these things on TV? You know what they say on TV? It says, gold, buy gold, buy gold, gold. Just amass gold, gold, gold. Man, if you're an alcoholic and you're sitting in your house with a whole bunch of gold, I feel sorry for you. If that's what you're worried about, if that's what your focus is. You know? But I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and an honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, this is what the number one thing for him was. This is the number one thing for Bill Wilson. Number one thing for Dr. Bob. Number one thing for my sponsors. Number one thing for me. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man. The love and understanding of a gracious God. See that box there? That box can't love. See, this book tells you all about God. It says if you stay close to him and perform his work well, it says he has work for you. He says he wants you to do work. He has desires for you. He cares about you. He talks about him like a real individual. I know he's a real individual because I talk to him all the time. I think about him all the time. At night when I can't get to sleep, I talk. I buried two of my sponsors. I buried two of them. And when they were lying in bed and they were dying of emphysema and cancer, you want to know something? The Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous was not there. They were not there. I'm just telling you. When you die, the Carl Gables Group is not going to be there. You want to know something? All the people in the Union Church, they ain't going to be there. There's only going to be one person dying. That's you. I feel extraordinarily sorry for you if you don't know where you're going or who your God is or what's going on. You're just there all alone. Because there ain't going to be no meetings. There ain't going to be no discussion group. It's just you not knowing anything about anything. And that's a scary way to live, and it's a scary way to die. It's kind of hard to do this third step while you're dying. You really want to get this thing together before that happens. It says, I have gained the greatest thing according to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I have been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. He wants to serve. That's our maximum purpose. We have maximum service to God and other people. See to it your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Maybe you don't want great events to happen to you. Maybe you don't care about great events. That's okay, you do whatever you want to do. It's your life. I'm not sure this is a dress rehearsal. I think this is it, guys. This may be it. Right? So I'm sitting here, I was about 4 or 5 months sober, and my sponsor, Bob, was driving me up. We were going to collect Bobby, another guy he sponsored, who kept on getting drunk. Every 30 days, Bobby would get drunk, and my sponsor, Bob, and I would go out and get him up at Bark and bring him down and clean him up. And I was watching all this. I was watching how Bobby was kept on getting drunk, and I was getting really upset because I saw how he was mistreating my sponsor, his sponsor, how he was lying, how he was a phony, how he was wasting our time. I was upset for a whole bunch of reasons. I used to get upset a lot during those days. During the first 20 years or so, I got upset a lot. You want to get upset, just hang around the Alcoholics Anonymous. Meetings will get you upset. People will get you upset, So I'm driving up there, and I get into this deal. I said, we ought to turn around. This guy is full of crap. He did this last month. He did the month before that. He did the month before that. He did the month before that. I said, I had the 3x card. I got the photographs. I got the tape recordings. I got everything. This guy's a loser. He doesn't care. He's always saying he's sorry. He's always drinking. Blah, 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 blah. I go on for 20 minutes. I'm like giving my closing argument, my opening statement. I've got evidence. I've got slides. There is, let me tell you something. I'm right. I'm so right. I'm alky right. You know what I mean? Like, if you disagree with me, you got to die because you're so stupid. You know what I mean? And so I'm just pounding my sponsor, and he doesn't give a crap about you. Bam, 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 bam. He's sort of driving and listening, and he says, and so, and then I finally, I was like my own lynch. I ran out of steam, and he said to me, he said, are you done? I said, yeah, yeah. He says, no, are you done? I said, yeah, yeah. I wasn't really done. I was still, because after you go through that tirade, you got the alky, you got the crowd, you got the mob in your mind. You're talking to groups of thousands in your brain, and you're right. And he's right. What's he going to say? And he says, no, are you done? I said, yes, yes. He says, are you finished? I said, yes, yes, yes. So I'm waiting. What's he going to say? I'm so right. It's unbelievable. What's he going to say? I'm a lawyer. I'm a practicing attorney. I'm a trial attorney. He didn't even graduate like grade school. You know what I mean? I'm right. I got the 3x5 cards and everything like that. He turns to me, and this is what he says. He says, Russell, I said, what? He says, Russell, I said, what? What? He says, it doesn't bother me like it bothers you. I look at him, I say, how can it not bother you? Everything bothers me, you know what I mean? And the problem was, I wanted everything he had, and he wanted nothing I had. He apparently had what I had about 15 years prior to that, and he was working real hard to get rid of it, whatever it was. Many years later, another sponsor of mine, and another time I'll tell you about it, he told me, he says, Russ, he says, you're upset because you're upsettable. I said, what's that? You're upset because you're upsettable. Shit upsets you. It has nothing to do with anything that's going on. It has to do with you. You're just an upset waiting to happen. You're upset because you're upsettable.
1 month later, I go to a group called the Keynote Group. You know, you run into people. He says, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length, you run into people that are amazing. You just run into amazing people. If you got ears to hear and eyes to see, you see amazing crap. Crap that you can't ignore. Now, you see, I'm going to this group called the Keynote Group. This is how you develop faith. I think the first thing you need in order to develop faith is you got to want it. You got to want it. You got to want it. If you want what we have, you know, if you don't want what we have, you'll never get faith. If you don't want it, you'll never get it. It just won't happen. You got to want it so bad. You got to say, man, I wish I could believe. I'll do whatever I got to do. I want that deal. You know, blessed are the man, hunger, thirst after righteousness. I want that deal. I want to believe. You got to want it. You know, he ain't going to be forced on you. He can't. How can he force it on an alcoholic? I mean, you're tougher than tensile steel. You're not going to buy it unless you want it. And I go to this meeting at the Keynote Group, and this guy named Al Kennedy is speaking. He's got like 30 years. He's doing whatever he's doing, you know. He's talking about something. I'm sitting in the front row. I'm mesmerized by this guy. He's talking like off script. He's not even reading stuff. He's like an electrician or something. He's talking about his life. He's talking about stuff. He's talking about real things. He's talking about the real deal. I'm like mesmerized by this guy. He's like one of these guys. He's talking. And, you know, how does this guy talk for an hour about himself and things that I understand, stuff that I didn't even understand, stuff about myself that I didn't even know about? Just so clear, so concise, so comfortable in his own skin. You know what I mean? In such a way, so like I knew him all my life. Like one of these guys, I said, man, if I could always hang out with this guy, and you know, maybe I could learn some. Maybe it's like a virus. I would catch something. You know what I mean? That's what my sponsor and all these guys were like. No matter how crazy my life was, if I could get next to them, and they looked at me and said, Russ, it's going to be okay. You're going to be. I sort of started calming down. They just sort of like they were just that deal. They had whatever that deal was that God abused people. That somehow it calmed me down. And so this guy's talking, and I'm listening, and finally he gets up and he leaves. You know, they clap, he leaves, and everything like that. And I looked at my sponsor and said, man, he was great. That guy was great. Emil, I love what he said. And this is what my sponsor says to me. He says, you know, he's dying of cancer. And I said, this is what I said. I said, because he was at an A meeting, he was talking like I'm talking, you know, he's talking, you know. He's not talking about cancer or anything like that. He's not talking about it. It's not like a discussion. He's not saying, oh, I'm dying. He's trying to talk to people about his life and how incredible it is, how incredible God is and what God has done for him. It's all that sort of stuff, you know? He says he's dying of cancer. And I look at him. This is what I say. I say, no, I'm talking about the guy who just did the meeting. He says, yeah, I'm talking about the guy who's dying of cancer. I said, no, that guy, Al Kennedy, just did the meeting. He says, yeah, he's dying of cancer. He's got 3 months to live. So, I mean, I saw this. I was there. You know what I mean? This isn't like make-believe. I'm not making this crap up. You can't make this stuff up. How can I make this stuff up? You think I go home and say, let me make up a story about Al Kennedy? You know what I mean? I mean, I'm used to going to meetings and guys saying, you know, my mother doesn't understand me. My boss doesn't understand me. You know, my wife doesn't understand me. Nobody understands what's going on. I'm losing my job. What am I going to... I'm used to complaint. Which is pretty much the way Alkies talk during their first 20 years or so, you know, with their head up their ass, you know, me, selfishness, self-centeredness, 1,000 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, step on the toes of others, we must get rid of selfishness, we must or it kills us, God makes that possible, the wrongdoings of others, fancy the real, the power to kill, that's pretty good for about 20 years. So you get your head out of your ass and you start really getting serious about this deal, stop worrying about what other people may think about you, start getting serious. So that's what I'm used to. That's what I'm used to in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not used to... I don't even understand what he's talking about. What do you mean he's dying of cancer? He's dying of cancer, Russ. He's got 3 months left. I said, he didn't say anything. He says, I know. He didn't even, you know... I mean, I don't know about you, but I would have like said, oh, by the way, you know, it's good to be with you guys, but I just want you to know I got 3 months to live. You know, I mean, just I would have gotten something out of it. You know what I mean? Nope. He didn't say anything. 3 months later, Al Kennedy was dead. Man, you talk about a vision for you.
Rarely have I seen a person fail as thoroughly fought our battle. He says, if you want what we have, and I'm willing to go to any length, if you want what we have, you don't think I incorporate that guy in my we? You don't think that my idea about what got you, my idea about alcoholism and where this could take you and what it could do for you went from not drinking one day at a time, like maybe I could get like, what if I could get like 10% of that shit? Because all I did was worry about myself and worry about living and worry about dying and worry about money. What if I could get like just 10% of that stuff? Whatever he was smoking, you know what I mean? So that I didn't have to worry about dying. How do you do that? I didn't have to worry about faith. I just wanted what he had. You know, I just wanted what Al Kennedy had. That's the deal I wanted. Where's this thing? You know, I love it when I print up stuff and then I can't find it. So this is cool. The guy in the glass. Pelf, P-E-L-F. Pelf, P-E-L-F is an English word, an old English word. It means, you ready for this? Stuff. Stuff, you know? Stuff. Blouses, shoes, cars, women, men, you know, all sort of stuff. You know, it says in the sixth step and the seventh step, we don't mean to deprecate material things, money, property, prestige, and romance, you know, all that sort of stuff. It means stuff. When you get what you want and you struggle for pelf, and the world makes you king for a day, then go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that guy has to say. For it isn't your father or mother or wife whose judgment upon you must pass. The fellow whose verdict counts most in your life is the guy staring back from the glass. He's the fellow to please, never mind all the rest, for he's with you clear up to the end, and you've passed your most dangerous, difficult test, if the guy in the glass is your friend. You may be like Jack Horner and chisel a plum and think you're a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. You can fool the whole world down the pathway of years and get pats on the back as you pass, but your final reward will be heartache and tears if you've cheated the guy in the glass. You know, listen, I don't care how you present yourself, I don't care what you're wearing, I don't care what you're driving, I don't care any of that stuff. I don't even care how many years you've been sober. Man, you're walking around saying shit to yourself like I'm a piece of crap, or condemning yourself, or condemning other people, or talking about other people behind their back, or saying bad crap about other people, or thinking bad things about other people and about yourself. Don't be telling me you're sober, because you're anything but. You're just playing games. Just playing games of this deal. If you're just thinking crap about other people and thinking crap about yourself, you know, you're just playing with this thing. If you're not thinking what you should be thinking about, what you should be focused on in this deal, if you've been here for a while. I understand we all have to go through that deal. I want to tell you a little bit about the miners. Some of you have heard about the miners, but we've run short on time. But maybe next week will be the miner story, okay? So God bless you. Thank you very much.